Who built the sun? Who built the sun? That means that question assumes that somebody built it, right? Because you say, who built it? That's like saying, what kind of cheese is the moon made out of? Well, that assumes it's made out of cheese, but in fact, it's not made out of cheese. The sun is one of hundreds of billions of stars in our galaxy, the Milky Way. And by the way, that was not known like forever. We kept thinking, the sun, that's special, and then these stars in the night sky, they're just little dots of light. And it took a while for people to figure out that these dots of light are just like the sun, except much, much farther away, and therefore dimmer. Okay, so we now, with our telescopes, look around the universe, and we find these huge clouds of gas. And these clouds of gas have gravity inside them, and that gravity collapses the gas. And every place you have collapsing gas inside of one of these clouds, you have the birth of an entire new star system. Not only with a star in the middle, but with a system of planets in orbit around it. It happens all by itself, all the time, and we can watch it happen with our biggest telescopes. So what's interesting to me is that if you go to a galaxy 5 billion light years away, the light from the formation of our own solar system would only just now be reaching them. So they would look this way and they would see the solar system being born. Better yet, get a galaxy 65 million light years away. They're looking at events that happened on Earth 65 million years ago. The light from those events are just reaching them today. And what happened on Earth 65 million years ago? Dinosaurs croaked because an asteroid took them out. They could bear witness to the asteroid impact that rendered 70% of all the life on Earth extinct, except some of our mammal ancestors, who then could evolve to be something more ambitious than hors d'oeuvres for T-Rex, which is what our mammal ancestors were. A couple more, some more questions. Yes, right here. Yes.
What do you have to say to people who don't think that space exploration and research are necessary?
What do I have to say to people? Okay, so I'm not going to require that you like science or research or space. No, there's a free country. You can like or not like whatever you want. And I mean this sincerely, in a country with free speech, and we hope free thought, if you want to think the world is flat, go right ahead. But you should not be put in charge of space agencies if you think that, okay? Which is fine. We could find some other job for you. There's plenty of other jobs, okay? So that's not a problem. Okay. So for me, the exploration of space is a force of nature unto itself on the hearts and minds and ambitions of a culture. So everyone is saying, why are we putting money up there when we have problems here on Earth? And you know what I think of? I think of back in the cave, when someone looks out of the cave and says, gee, I wonder what's on the other side of that hill. Don't think about what's outside the cave until we solve our problems inside the cave. You see how absurd that sounds, okay? You see how small-minded that sounds. And here you are trying to solve the problems of the Earth looking down, and then the asteroid is coming, all right? You're not even looking, all right? So, where was I before I distracted myself? So, here it is. Let's say our government decided that we were going to turn the solar system into our backyard. Let's just say that. So what would that take? You need a whole suite of launch vehicles. These will go to Mars, this will go to a comet, this will go to an asteroid. Maybe you want to mine that asteroid. The first trillionaire ever will be the person who mines asteroids for their natural resources. That'll be the first trillionaire, mark my words. All right, So you might want to go to the moon, the backside of the moon. You haven't seen that before. So the whole solar system is just a matter of what rocket combinations you choose. And then you go, well, if we did that, look how many frontiers will be breached in doing so. We would need the best biologists in case we're looking for life on Mars, the best technologists because we, the best space miners, okay? And I'm not talking about Bruce Willis, okay? I'm talking about just all of these fields that represent the STEM portfolio, science, technology, engineering, and math. They're all represented in that mission statement, okay? So now watch what happens. So the country's doing this, and you're in school. You see headlines coming down each day. Look what the astronauts did here and there and over. Maybe you don't want to become a scientist. Maybe you want to become a lawyer, okay? So, but you like space. Somebody's got to write the laws about who owns the minerals on the asteroid. Now you're a screenwriter, and she hears about a new vista, a mountainscape on the backside of Mars, on the Mars moon Phobos, and she's got a whole movie story that she's going to write about this. Just think about what culture that would stimulate within us. We go from a sleepy country to becoming an innovation nation. And I submit to you that under those conditions, all those innovations will drive our economy like they've never been driven before. And so as a result, because you know what you have today? You have in Congress and other places, we need there are enough people that know that science is important. We get that. So now watch, here's what they say. We need a program to get kids interested in science. Okay, do you know why you need such a program? Because you're not doing anything that's getting them interested in it. There's nothing happening out there. So you gotta create a program. I'm old enough to, and some of you, I see some gray hair, remember the 1960s, we're going to the moon. You didn't need special programs to get people interested. We were climbing over each other to be scientists and technologists because we wanted to be a part of that adventure. It was built into the DNA of who and what we were in that era. You don't have to tell people that require it of them, make it a special program. It all follows. So if you have a better way to stimulate our economy, I want to hear it. But all the research I've done tells me that all you have to want to do is go into space, and you will get the most creative people rising up, stepping forward, and taking us into the future we all imagined we'd be living today and are not. Got a question up front here. Hello.
What do you think about dark energy?
Wow, okay. Can anybody see you? Wait, let's see who you are. This is who asked that question. Okay, thank you. You're wearing a lab coat, I noticed. Did you just come from a lab?
No.
I don't believe you. She said no, but you're wearing a lab coat. And you just asked me a question about dark energy, which is on the frontier of modern astrophysics. So I have to wonder, what are you doing in your basement? Because this is how you get super villains. Are you doing experiments? Do your parents know what you're doing in the basement? Okay, so did you ask about dark energy or dark matter?
Dark energy.
Okay. We discovered 20 years ago, oh, by the way, how old are you?
8.
Okay. Now you're embarrassing half of everybody here because they don't even understand what they're saying. You gotta ask simpler questions next time, then we don't get all embarrassed because grown-ups, we get embarrassed by that, okay? So we discovered 20 years ago that there's a mysterious pressure in the vacuum of space that is against the force of gravity. It's opposite the force of gravity that's making the universe accelerate in its expansion. We can measure this, but we do not know what it is. So we just came up with a term. We call it dark energy, but we should just call it Fred or Wilma, because we don't know what it is, but we can measure it. Now, here's the thing. If this dark energy keeps up, as we predict will happen, the expansion of the universe will accelerate and move faster and faster and faster. And even the nearby galaxies will accelerate and ultimately go beyond our horizon of visibility. And all the galaxies of the universe will cease to be recognized in the night sky. And all information about the history of the universe will be gone. And all that will be in our universe is just the starry night and nothing else. So for me, that's spooky. I'll tell you why. If we are cosmologists a trillion years from now, unless we keep good records and hand it to them, they will know nothing of the origin of the universe, because all the record of that will have long accelerated beyond the horizon. They'll know nothing of it, so they'll try to figure out the universe, missing an entire chapter. So they'll get it wrong. Now here's what I stay awake at night. I ask, is there some chapter of the book of the universe that has been ripped from our pages because we're born in the wrong time to experience it? Yet here we are thinking we've got all the information we need to decode the operations of nature. So I lose sleep over that. But now, since you're asking me about dark energy, maybe you're going to be the one who figures it out. Then you get a Nobel Prize, and they give you $1.3 million. And then the press has pictures of you asking this question here today and now. Okay? So pleased to meet you. Your name was?
Lindsay.
Hi, Lindsay. Pleased to meet you. Thank you. Okay. I got a silver-haired man right in front of me. Silver-haired. Yes, go, sir. Yeah, you got the silver hair. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Yes, so he's worried about the expanding universe bumping into another universe that's expanding. Yeah, so the galaxies in our universe are all expanding away from one another. This is the evidence of the expanding universe. You said, is it expanding from a center? Yes, but that center is not accessible to us. For example, if you take a balloon and expand it and draw little sort of galaxies on the surface of that balloon, the balloon is expanding. And if you're on the surface of that balloon, you might ask, where's the center? That center is not on the surface of the balloon. The center is backwards in time when you started the expansion of that balloon. So you have to add time as a dimension here to figure out where and when things happen. So yes, we're expanding, but there's no point we can place we can point to and say, that's the center. And so all expanding apart, we do have galaxies that collide. We're going to collide with Andromeda in 7 billion years. I put it on my calendar. October 12th, 7 but in 7 billion years, that's longer than the life expectancy of the sun. So we will have other issues to concern ourselves than the collision of our galaxy with Andromeda. Oh, by the way, the death of the sun, I don't mean to mess with you or anything, but when the sun dies, it will expand. It will expand so large that it will completely engulf the orbit of the Earth. Imagine sunrise. It would be the entire horizon would be the surface of the sun showing up in front of you. Well, that's before the end of days, because the sun has not yet eaten Earth. It will continue to expand until it engulfs Earth itself. Earth's oceans would have come to a rolling boil. The rolling boil oceans would have evaporated into the atmosphere. The atmosphere would have evaporated into space. And Earth would be a charred ember orbiting within the sun's surface, deep within until it vaporized. Have a nice day. Yeah, okay. Yes, little girl in red hair, yes. You made a report on me in school, and you're wondering if you can give it to me? Okay, now I have to say yes, okay? If you can find someone who works at the museum and hand it to them, and then they'll make sure I get it, okay? Otherwise, it's hard to navigate here. Time for a few more questions here. Right here, front row in front of the stanchion, yes. Okay, louder in your outdoor voice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question is, oh, you heard all. So this space has pretty good acoustics. So these people heard you, but they didn't, so there must be a thing going on here. So I'll help you guys in the back there. So, and there's some people behind trees over here. Yeah, I'm thinking of you, I feel you there. And you guys okay over here? All right, we good. So the question was about the newly appointed head of the Environmental Protection Agency, someone who has expressed denial in the role of human intervention, forces that lead to climate change as head of the Environmental Protection Agency. So for me, like I said, we live in a free country. You should think what you want. So my concern would not be what the head of any agency thinks. My concern would be what the head of any particular agency does. Okay? It's what they do. And so I can't comment on, you know, especially in the last year, all kinds of things have been said. And then the week later, they get unsaid or said differently. And so I can't chase the phantoms of people's, of what they say. We can address any attempt at legislation that may be scientifically underinformed or misinformed. That hasn't happened yet. Okay? How about the front row here in the blue shirt? Yes. That's you, yes. Outdoor voice, go. Now, I know, you're a kid, I know you can speak louder than that. We'll get you a microphone. Here it is. Microphone, go.
Is life only sustainable on a planet with an atmosphere?
Good question. Is life sustainable on a planet only if it has an atmosphere? Life as we know it, yes. Life as we know it. But how about life as we don't know it? Ooh, okay, so now here's the thing. If you come up with a kind of life that doesn't need an atmosphere, okay, I got you, we good. Is there some way that this life obtains energy? Do you know where we get our energy from? We get it by killing other things that were once alive. Well, no, excuse me, there are three things you consume that was not once alive, but everything else was once alive. So it's milk, honey, and salt. Everything else you have killed for your sustenance. Yeah, I'm talking about vegetarians as well. You are slaughtering carrots and cucumbers and celery that were minding its own business in the ground. So think about it, if you're an alien species where all of your energy is derived from photocells on the surface of your body from the host star, and so everybody lives this way, which means nobody ever kills anything, and then you come visit Earth and see what's going on here, your head would explode. We would be the most violent place you could have ever imagined in the history of the universe, history. And so it's interesting how biased we are when we think of what life is. And you want to sort of loosen that up. There is life that thrives underground where there's no oxygen. It's called anaerobic life. That's how the chemists say no oxygen. They make a complicated word so that no one else understands what the hell they're talking about, okay? The chemists. Any chemists here? You know what I'm... Chemists, raise your hand. You, am I lying or am I... I'm telling the truth. And you know who's more guilty than chemists? Geologists. Oh, my gosh. Geologists. Guilty. Raise your hand. Guilty. I see a pretty rock on there. I said, oh, look at that pretty rock. My geologist said, oh, that's orthoclase feldspar. I don't want the rock anymore. You keep it. I was thinking of tweeting earlier today. I have many friends who are geologists, so I try not to take them for granted. I'll tweet that before the day is out. And, but based on your reaction, maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. Sir, right here. Yes, go. So what's the chances of there be some kind of life living on those three Goldilocks planets in the seven-planet system if it's not life like us? Yeah, this is where good science fiction writers who have a background in biology and physics, who can know where to anchor the laws of nature but then extend and let their imagination run wild. That makes the best kinds of films. So yeah, maybe I got a better idea than trying to ask if life is on those planets. We learned recently that you can start out with a solar system that has dozens of planets. Dozens. Maybe we started out with dozens. You run the models, put in dozens of planets, and watch the orbits unfold. There's competition. Some planets get eaten by other planets. Others get sent into their host star. Others get kicked out of the star system. In fact, most get kicked out. And then we're left with a solar system with only 8 planets. Get over it. Pluto had it coming from way back. Just don't get me started about Pluto. So, here's the thing. We think of, in biology class, we say life needs the sun. No, it doesn't need the sun, it just needs energy. Wherever that energy is coming from. A freshly born planet has energy left over in its core. So, you could be a planet kicked out of its star system in the void, the depths of interstellar space, not near any star. Your surface is frozen, but you've got this sort of volcanic energy gurgling deep within. Any water that was in the formation of your planet would be liquefied by that heat. There is a chance that there are more vagabond planets than planets that have homes around stars. And some of those may still have an energy source, even though they're not near any star at all. And somebody needs to think about what life might be like on those planets. Whatever it is, they wouldn't be seeing visible light because that's not near a star. They'd have some other ways of getting around and thriving. So I think Hollywood has been lazy with their aliens. All their aliens have two legs, arms, a head, eyes, mouth, neck. Most life on Earth with which we have DNA in common does not look like that. And that's life on Earth. Then you realize in Hollywood, they're paying an actor in a rubber costume. That's why they look so human. So I think Hollywood has a long way to go for their creativity about life that they're trying to just invent. Let's get someone from a back row. Back there, yes. Back row. Why do I think we don't have more scientists? Okay, so he's saying, why don't we have more scientists in the political system? So it's a two-pronged problem. You need scientists to run and people to vote for scientists, right? That means you'll be voting for someone because of what they know. What a concept. No, it's a peculiar thing. It's a peculiar thing where you would never elect the CEO of a major corporation just because they're fun to have beer with. You'd like look at their resume and look at their history and did they make good decisions and then you put them in charge. But somehow in the American political system, we like charisma. Somehow that matters. And I don't fully understand it. I recognize it. I don't claim to fully understand it. And science is not about your charisma. It's about are you a hard worker? Are you detail oriented? Do you have fresh ideas about how the world works? Do you have fresh ideas that could lead to new discoveries about how the world can work? And this is a whole other sort of state of mind and being. So we'd have to really rethink what we are as a democracy to include professions other than attorneys or others who have been so heavily represented over the years. More than half of all members of Congress over the years. Oh, no. No, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Could you catch the question? Something about he wanted me to run for president in 2020, something like that. And then I said, no. Yeah, all right. So the reason, sorry, I'm not standing on this side with you guys over here, sorry. That means I'm not thinking about you. So I was asked that once by the New York Times. There was some impasse in Congress. And they said, let's ask people who are not politicians, professional politicians, maybe they've got a solution. And maybe it's not, you can't blame the politicians, that maybe they're just hard problems. So the question, what would you do if you were president? So that was what they asked me. And so I replied, if I were president, I wouldn't be president. Here's why. To even think that way implies that all the problems we have are because of dysfunctional politicians. And that all you need to do is swap one out, put in someone better, and everything will be fine. That's why they even ask the question. Think about that assumption. Think about that. It implies that we're all just here, the electorate, and we don't really matter. What matters is the politician at the top, and that's a bad one. Swap them out, put in another one, and everything will be fine. You know what we've done lately? We've made a sport of criticizing politicians. We've made a sport of attacking politicians. And then we are angry and I'm thinking, is this the time to remind you that we live in a democracy? You voted for these people. We voted for people. So to now say, oh, they suck, blah, 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 blah. You vote. So if you have issues with a head of state, a head of a county, a state, if you have issues, your issues are not with the politician. Your issues are with your fellow voters. Because if you have a dysfunctional government, it's because you have a dysfunctional electorate. So I, as an educator and as a scientist, I'm almost duty-bound to ignore the politicians because they're duly elected. I will go to the electorate and say, here is what science is and how and why it works. And here's how you can become empowered thinking that way. Now take it and fold it into your politics or your religion or your personal philosophies. That's how that really should happen. Because as I've said before, one of the good things about science is that it's true whether or not you believe in it. So that if you're going to base policy on something, It should be based on something that is objectively true. Then you put your political nuance on that. This whole thing about climate change. You could debate whether it's real while the rest of the world recognizes emergent truth. You go ahead and do that, then you'll be just left behind, first of all. Second, you're wasting time on trying to influence the politics of how to deal with the objective truth. Will you put in carbon tax? Do you subsidize an industry? Or do you buy from China? These all have political solutions, nuances, because different politics handles that in different ways. That's what should be going on in Congress right now. That would be an informed system of governance. But when people are fighting over what is actually true, when we know what is true, I don't know what country that is. But what I do know is that it's the beginning of an end of an informed democracy when that happens. One more, okay. So, got time for one more question. So it better be like a completely awesome question because everyone is gonna be paying attention. So we got one right in the front row here. Come on up here. Come on up. Can you step up? Okay, yeah, so what's your question? We'll come over here in the sunlight here. Here we go. Okay, cool. So you can hold, you ever hold a microphone before? It's really cool. Because sometimes when you have an outdoor voice, with this, you can use your indoor voice and have an outdoor voice at the same time. See, let's try that. Okay.
What inspired you to become an astrophysicist?
Excellent. So how old are you?
9.
You're 9? Okay, so pick you up so everybody can see you. Okay. So, hang on, so hold this for a second. Just hold this, okay? You're fine, okay. So now, I was 9 years old. And my family, my brother, my sister, and me, and my parents, we visited our local planetarium in New York City. You're not gonna fall, don't worry about it, I got you, you're fine.
I got you.
Okay. I'm 300 pounds more than you, I got this, okay? So what happened was I grew up in New York City, and every weekend, the family went to a different cultural institution or a different place where there were grown-ups doing really cool things. So we would go to the opera, and then we go to a play, and we go to the zoo. We go to the science museum, the dinosaur museum. We go to the planetarium. We go to an art museum. Basically every weekend. And I was bored through a lot of that, but later on I would look back and appreciate what that exposure meant to me and my ambitions. And whenever you have institutions where people care about your enlightenment. Look at this place. I assume you do not take this place for granted. It's a place to learn. You learn about people who curate artifacts. They're experts in history and in culture and these are all kinds of things you can do as a grown-up. Beyond the ones that are obvious in the street, the people who pump gas, the obvious professions that are out there, then there are others that are behind the doors. So, I was 9 years old, went to the Hayden Planetarium in New York. You got one of these up in Chicago, the Adler Planetarium, the first in the United States, by the way, was Adler. In New York City, we were the fourth. So, I go into the dome, and they dim the lights, and the stars come out. There's like countless thousands of stars, and I thought it was a hoax. You know what a hoax is? I thought they were just making pretend. Because I had seen the night sky from New York City. There's about 11 stars there. And so I had evidence that they were not telling me the truth, because I had seen the night sky from the Bronx. And I would later learn that the sky, as they showed me in the dome, was exactly what it looks like from mountaintops in the clearest places in the countryside. And I said, wow, if that's the actual universe, there must be more. There's stuff I don't know about. And I celebrated my ignorance because this universe felt so limitless and I wanted to know the unknown. So in a word, I was starstruck from age 9. It would take me a couple of years, so by age 11, I would get my first telescope, and I realized there are people who do this for a living. They study the universe for a living. I said, that's what I want to do. I'm starstruck, I might as well like get paid for it, right? So from age 11 onward, I had an answer to that annoying question grown-ups always ask kids. What's that annoying question they always ask?
What do you want to be when you grow up?
Exactly. From age 11 onward, I had an answer, and I said, I want to be an astrophysicist. Now, this basically shut them all up, because they had no... Usually they say, if you want to say I want to be a doctor or a lawyer, Aunt Betty is a doctor, or Uncle Joe's a lawyer. But they didn't know anybody who was an astrophysicist. That was just the end of the conversation. And they walked away, and I went on about my studies. So that's what it took. Now, you could be struck by something else, maybe a great painting in the Art Institute of Chicago, or some of the great artifacts here. You never know what might influence you. But what you can do is be as exposed as you possibly can. So that when the day comes when you're saying, this is what I know I want to do, you can be sure that's the right decision because you've seen 1,000 options that you didn't like as much as the one you picked. Life should always be about choices on Earth and in the universe. So thank you. Okay, come on down. Come on down. Thank you all for coming today. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you all so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, IMB. Come see us again. Thanks so much.